Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 334 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. It is 2022 for the first time on this show, and I'm joined, as I often am, by Eric Cole. Hello, sir. It's not baseball season, but it's 2022.
It is not baseball season. I do want to send my condolences to my diehard Michigan Wolverines fan who had a tough semifinal round of the college football playoffs. I will say I was pulling for your squad just to, you know, just in the hopes that I could, you know, see some joy in your life. But as it turns out, that's not really how it worked out. But
I think our listenership was not rooting for me, and that's okay. I'm okay with that.
That you were certainly a heavy underdog in that regard.
Yeah, that's what, listen, I made sure the entire time to not talk any noise because I said multiple times that I thought Michigan was going to lose the game, and they lost the game. So
yeah,
it was worse than I thought it was going to be. I got to be honest about that. It was worse than I thought, but I wasn't like shaking to my core. I kind of expected it to not go very well. So nice season. Anyway,
yeah, it's a good Georgia team. Happy for the Georgia fans out there for sure.
Indeed. And thanks for starting this podcast on that note, Eric. I really appreciate that. That's a nice lifting.
I am nothing if not a man of the people.
No notice, no warning. Just send me down the spiral here on January 9th. it's fine. I mean, honestly, people know the deal at this point about baseball as it is at the moment. We do have continuing coverage of the Braves and of baseball on the site, and also the Daily Hammer with Sean. Sean's doing great work on Daily Hammer twice a week, three times a week, something like that. We have not done a podcast on the TC show in a couple of weeks since Scott and I talked pre-Christmas, and that was kind of by design, and nothing's happened. I mean, quite literally nothing has happened. We're now 6 weeks into the lockout. There's not been a single negotiating session for the two sides. The last report from Jeff Passan, who of course loves Scott, reported Jeff did that the next proposal is going to be hopefully on the league side, according to the PA, at least what they think. But February 1st is like a date people keep circling as like when stuff needs to be talking again, because like I guess there's just nothing on the agenda, which drives me insane. I don't know how you feel about that. Like just the fact that they have not been talking the last few weeks is kind of enraging. If you're someone trying to be invested in baseball, and it's more like symbolic than anything else. Like no one thought it was going to get done in January, but like, how about just like do a fake session? Like give me something, give me some negotiating, give me some leak of some kind, but man, it's just been absolute silence.
I will say that I'm certain that there's some informal talks type happening, like, and but I don't think it's on the big issues, right? But I'm with you. You know, obviously with the holidays, I don't think anyone expected like them to be negotiating on Christmas Eve or anything like that. But at the same time, there's a lot of issues that need to be worked through, and that's including like big rules changes, like maybe a pitch clock or DH. You know, whether I expand the playoffs, but I think all of those things are being used as negotiating positions for each side for varying reasons over the big economic issues that are in play. And that makes it really problematic to get any sort of discussion started, because it just seems like both sides are speaking completely different languages. The players want to know where all these revenues are coming from. They want to have justifications as to why the league keeps saying, you know, if we do things your way, that all like X teams will no longer be profitable and can't function. They want proof of that. These teams will not show their books. The league will not show their books. There's not even an agreement as to what shareable revenue is, right? And yep. if we're not even there, we're nowhere. And the league is just, it feels like the league has a position of, we like things the way they are now.
Of course.
The players are like, we don't. let's come to the middle and make an understanding here. And the league is just saying, no, we'll wait you out.
And which is basically what happens in almost every negotiation between billionaires and millionaires, is because the billionaires usually just hold out for longer, and that's how things go. But it is maddening, and that's one of the reasons why, and that's on this rabbit hole, that's one of the reasons why they can't do a salary cap in baseball, is because in order to do a salary cap, you have to understand what baseball revenue is, and the owners will not even like begin to talk about what is what and what counts. Because that's the thing, there's always a negotiation in football or in basketball about like what counts as related income, but they still have to like show their work and actually reveal what the money is, and they won't do it.
And they will not baseball is particularly bad about showing books, right?
Oh yeah.
And there's a lot of,
there are two teams that do. And even then they can cook the books because they're publicly traded. And one of them is the Braves, by the way. At least they have to present something, but 28 of the 30 teams can just present nothing if they want to.
Yep. And it's super frustrating because the owners and the league rely on one central truth in terms of what the fan base believes. It's that they have no problems with billionaires locking things up and wanting more money, but the instant the players start saying they want more money, that they rely on fans with the outcry, you are already getting paid millions to play a game, just shut up and play the game. And they rely on that public pressure. Now, it didn't work particularly well in 2020. Because what happened is that the leadership under Tony Clark has been suspect at best for the players union. He cared about things they shouldn't have cared about, and they should have cared more about these economic issues during the last round of negotiations, as opposed to like weird little perks for players that ultimately didn't cost that much money, didn't give them that much benefit, and cost them very large things in those negotiating sessions. But the smartest thing they ever did was when the league threatened to just be like, well, we're just not going to agree to that, and we can always go with this level of this long of a season, was them saying in 2020, fine, we'll just tell us when and where and we'll play. And the biggest bungle, I think, of Manfred's, like, I guess, negotiating career is when he said, never mind, if you don't waive the right to file a grievance, then we're just not going to have a season at all, right? And that changed the entire tenor of the negotiations. And a few days later, we end up having an agreement for, you know, the 60-day season, and it was a done deal. I don't know if there's something like that in play for the players right now. I don't know if they're like the overarching grievance over the 2020 season is like, I'm sure it's affecting the tenor of these negotiations, but, you know, is that even like a part of the discussion right now in terms of what, you know, what is on the table that could or could not be pursued? It's a mess. And it's not something like, you know, we want to have this many rounds in the draft, or we want to have this many days in the season. It's not an issue like that. It's the economics of baseball. And this is something that, you know, is worth a lot of money to a lot of people. I'm a little bit skeptical right now, because if I thought a deal was going to get done that wasn't going to mess up spring training, I would have thought they would have already been talking. But they haven't been. The two sides hate each other. They don't trust each other at all. And they haven't been talking. And all the issues that they're going to be talking about are not small. If that's the case, I'm very skeptical that at the very least spring training doesn't get messed up right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, maybe we'll do a whole like deep dive on this thing, but it does seem like they have to get going fairly soon, but it's not dire at this moment. And we'll do some of that later on if we want to, but it's...
I'll just say, if we don't hear like them actually meeting and talking this week, I'm just go ahead and pencil me in the camp that spring training's already going to get screwed up.
Yeah. I think it is more likely than not that spring training will be affected. Now, you can take that wherever you want to take it. Like, affected in what way is obviously the next bit portion of that sentence. But I think it's more likely than not that they are not following the agreed upon normal schedule for spring training, is my guess. We'll see.
Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong about that. The only other thing that happened in terms of like baseball stuff in the last couple of weeks is not even necessarily on the field at all. But I am wondering if you have a take on quite literally the only baseball story, and that's the Ken Rosenthal thing with MLB Network, in which it seems as if if you read the reporting from Andrew Marchand, that someone high up at Major League Baseball, i.e. probably Rob Manfred, did not enjoy Ken Rosenthal criticizing him, in my mind, pretty mildly back in 2020. And that might have been a big part, or at least some part, of him not being renewed at MLB Network. And I kind of shared a little bit on us on Twitter, where I kind of talked about how, you know, it's Rob Manfred. What do you expect, basically? Like, he's very bad at his job. But I wonder what you think about that whole thing, because I mean, one of the things that's crazy about it is that if that happens during the season, or if that happens at a normal time, it doesn't get covered nearly like it did. But another feather in the cap of Rob Manfred is to have this all happen when there's nothing else to talk about, so that everyone talks about this.
So I have a couple thoughts. One, the idea that a network would willingly employ Harold Reynolds versus Ken Rosenthal cracks me up to no end. Because there's a lot, I won't say a lot, there are several people at that network that have gotten jobs to shield them from, you know, just to kind of keep them afloat and shield them from possible responsibility. Looking at you, John Hart, for example. There's other guys who are not good at their jobs, are just not good analysts, and that they're employed at the MLB Network, versus Ken Rosenthal, who particularly around like free agency, not so much the draft, but the trade deadline, just transactions in general. He certainly is always involved. If he's not breaking the big stories, I think Jeff Passan's kind of taken the reins a bit more in terms of like the big sort of investigative type stories in a lot of ways. Rosenthal will certainly chime in here and there.
I mean, it's those two in their own tier, yeah, really.
That's the conversations between those two guys.
Yeah.
But in terms of transactions and all that stuff, like Rosenthal, if he's not the best, he's again right there with Passan. I think a couple things can be true here. One is that I do not think that Ken Rosenthal is cheap to employ whatsoever. I think that The Athletic has put a bunch of money into making sure that they have him around. I think that Fox has certainly invested a certain amount and they make sure they have him around, and that MLB Network is really going to miss him around those big event days, like the openings of free agency, winter meetings, the trade deadline, and things like that. I just don't think guys like Morrissey are even in the same, like we're talking about in the same universe. But I could see a world where the cost to retain him, combined with the fact that he hasn't always towed the company line, as it were, and that they decide that he was not worth that. I disagree with that assessment, because I think that one of the things that people turn into the MLB Network for isn't just like the retrospective pieces about, like, you know, like old World Series runs and all this other stuff. I think one of the reasons people turn into MLB Network is like to get the news of the day, similar to how SportsCenter used to function, where you could actually watch baseball on SportsCenter versus what it is now, which I frankly couldn't tell you. So, and he's really good for that sort of stuff. Just get updates on like negotiations, or there'd be contract negotiations, or, you know, what teams are involved with who, those rumors and stuff like that. That's one of the things he's really good at, and they're going to lose that. And I think that that's one of the big draws for the network. Now, I don't know how much he was requiring, but it's also very concerning, especially when he points in his, when his tweet comes out after the story's reported, that, you know, he's like, I'm never going to, you know, sacrifice my my journalistic integrity. It feels like that there was real pressure. Like, he got suspended kind of informally by the network, just basically wasn't on air for 3 months after that. They just didn't talk about it. Brought him back right before the trade deadline, because you don't want to lose those eyeballs during trade deadline season, but was effectively taken off the air for a few months after that. And then he's not renewed this year. And I think that that's really concerning, and brings to the front the concerns that everyone should have about a league owning a network, and understanding that that is not an unbiased point of view, that the league itself has interests that are not in the fans' interests and are not in the players' interests. They're in their interest. And when they start trying to color what is being reported, not all leagues are like this, right? Like, there are plenty of folks at like NFL.com, NBA. I mean, that it might piss off the league and it might irritate them when they break things, or they, you know, talk about things in certain ways, but that's not necessarily being colored by what the league wants to happen. Whereas it does seem like, at least partially, that the moves that are being made and the decisions that are being made are in an effort to try to portray the league in an inaccurate and more flattering light, and that's concerning.
Yeah, that's all well said. And to your point about his Rosenthal's tweet, I think that was not an accident. The part about his impartial reporting was not an accident that he included that, I'm fairly sure. So yeah, we'll never know, but I feel comfortable in saying that it's a terrible look for baseball, terrible look for the network, terrible look for the commissioner's office, and nothing new there. As it happens, regularly. Okay.
Yeah, Manfred is not good at his job or selling the fact that he's good at his job.
He's really not. Nor does he enjoy baseball, which is a problem. Anyway, we can do Rob Manfred hour later on. We'll probably do it at 10 other points during this offseason. But okay, it's time to move on. Our main objective on the show today is going to be talking about the outfield a bit. We have talked about the bullpen already. That has happened in terms of the course of talks in this offseason. I'm trying to spread this out, but it's time for a good old-fashioned outfield deep dive on what's going on right now. Take a stock of what the Braves have. How guys were last season, the young guys, which is, of course, your area of expertise. We'll get into all of that in a moment. But first, a word from our sponsors on the show today.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out. Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
All right, Eric. Let us talk about the outfield, shall we?
We shall.
It goes without saying that this is not the finished product. Normally, when we do these, we kind of do a review and a preview, and this time it's kind of like a all-encompassing because we don't know what's going to happen and everything's on pause. But we know some of what's going on. We know who the candidates are. We know what's kind of the landscape is right now. So we'll save like the what-if stuff for at the end. But I want to start with Ronald Acuna, who is pretty good at baseball. Seems like a pretty conservative thing to say, but he just turned 24 years old. He of course had the ACL surgery on July 21st. So we're almost 6 months away from that. He may not need a full year because, you know, he's a freak. And there's been videos of him circulating, hitting in BP. I know you saw that video. He looks good. But you know, I want to stress it's still not even 6 months since he had ACL surgery. So he's probably not ready to play right now. But it's worth noting he was the front runner for NL MVP when he got hurt last year. 82 games, 24 home runs, 17 stolen bases. He slugged almost 600. He had a 157 WRC plus. He's a good defender, all that fun stuff. Everybody knows that he's really good, but it's just kind of worth looking at the numbers every once in a while and be like, oh yeah, he was on pace for, you know, 45 homers and 35 ish steals. And he obviously could have tailed off a little bit, but if the season ended when he got hurt, he would have won the MVP. And having that guy around, I know people's kind of, not that people have forgotten about Ronald Acuna, that's not the case, but they won the World Series. So he has not been the number one focus as he probably will be coming into this season. He's pretty good. And it's nice to have that guy around, whether he's playing center field, right field, DH, whatever.
Yeah, and whenever he comes back, he will immediately become, if not the best player on the field, certainly one of them. Yeah, you know, he's really, really good at baseball. I think that there's a few things that we need to take in consideration here. One, when he comes back, you know, there's a real chance that they don't immediately slot him in at, like, center field, for example. I think that there's going to be a certain amount of easing him back in, and that probably means keeping him in right, which may just be the better place to have him anyway. But with the understanding that he also may not be running as much, he might not look quite like the same player, because one thing that is absolutely true is that while I think it's fair to expect him earlier than, like, again, what you were talking about, that full year timetable. You know, I don't think he's going to come back in July. The word that what he's been targeting anyway, and he's kind of circulated around and has been floating around, is that he's targeting a May return, which again is a pretty aggressive timetable, but he's been, the workout videos have looked good. Those aren't the types of workouts that you do with a guy that you're concerned that he's having, you know, setbacks or anything like that. He's just building up that strength, and, you know, he's a big, strong young guy. So I'm not super concerned about his ability to heal up. It's just kind of, you know, understanding that they go through the process and all of that. So again, he's looked good. I wouldn't be shocked if he's back by like maybe the end of May. It wouldn't shock me to do so. He might, especially starting off, might look a little differently. Like he's not as aggressive on the base paths. You know, you talk about the rest of this Braves team where, you know, especially with Ron Washington at third, you know, green means go, and they're always taking these extra bases. I think that he might be a little bit more careful as he's kind of getting more confidence in that leg. But I think he's going to be a big part of the team in 2022. Obviously, every time he's on the field, he's liable to do something that if we've seen it before, it's not been very often. He's, you know, even with missing the first 2 months of the season, I wouldn't be shocked if he gets MVP votes this year.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, I am going to try to damp down expectations as I would for any player coming off of a major injury like the one he had, but it wouldn't like stun me if he came back even earlier than what you're talking about. Like, you know, they're going to be careful with him for sure, but, you know, people were asking us, I know you've seen the tweets that I've seen, like, can he play opening day? It's like, well, that seems a little bit aggressive. I can't imagine that happening, but I also don't want to say it can happen. They have not said that it can't happen. No one has said he's not playing opening day. No one said that.
Yeah, well, you know,
I know
that there's a lot of reasons to take that route.
Well, I'm with you.
I'm gonna go ahead and say
it does not seem likely to me.
I'm not making any wagers because I already have one wager out there about Ronald Acuña Jr. that I'm having to honor. But I will say that color me skeptical that happens.
I am also skeptical. I just wanted to make sure.
Especially with the spring training that looks like it's going to be a little wonky.
Yeah, I just wanted to just say out loud, like they have not said he's not playing at the beginning of the season. I'm with you. I think it's more like May, maybe June, but we'll see. But regardless, like when he comes back, there's no indication that he won't be awesome. He's never not been awesome, basically. But, you know, he might take a little bit to come back to full strength. And you can't just assume, even though he is kind of Superman, that he's just like the guy that he's always been immediately when he steps on the field. So with that said, like the reason why I want to start there other than just it's Ronald Acuña is that, you know, we all know that when he's back, he's in the slot playing every day. That's not up for debate. But provided that the DH exists, and I think the assumption is still that it's going to, it's not a foregone conclusion, it's not absolutely happening, but if you assume the DH is going to happen, the Braves have to fill four spots. Because generally, if you look at this roster right now, the DH is likely come from the outfield for the most part, especially when you have the guy we'll talk about next in Marcell Ozuna, if he's on the team. So I know we'll get to that. But it's just worth noting that, like, yes, they have some baseball, they have some major league ready players right now that are available for opening day, but it's not even necessarily only the three spots that you have to fill opening day. You kind of might have to fill a fourth plus depth and beyond that. Like we'll get into all these guys in a second, but the fact that they don't have Acuña for sure in April makes it even harder to build out the roster. And they have some roster challenges already in the outfield, but that is one of them because, like, they'll have a better idea than we do. But let's just say this. If they knew or suspected that Ronnie was out until June, that is a different roster building challenge than if you thought he was back in April. Like, that's 2 months.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, if you knew or thought that he might not be back to the All-Star break, and I'm just talking now, this is just a hypothetical, you couldn't go into the season with the same outfield that you might go into the season with if you thought he was going to be able to play in May. Like, that's a big difference. So
covering 3 weeks of games is very different than covering 12.
Yeah. I mean, even three versus 8 weeks or whatever, like there's kind of a fine line that they're going to have to walk, and they're not going to pressure Ronnie because they know that he's their guy long-term, he's under contract and all that stuff, but they do have to have some planning contingencies in place, which makes it difficult. And we'll talk about part of that now. Moving on from Ronnie, I'm not doing this in order to make you this mad, Eric, but we're going to talk about Marcell Ozuna now. Marcell Ozuna is 31 years old. He is eligible to play. He is not suspended. He is on the roster. No one that I talk to wants him to play, including myself. But he is on the team and the money is real. The universal DH is probably going to happen. And if it does, he's better there than he would be in the outfield. But the big thing about Marcell Ozuna is he's under contract for the next three seasons with about $50 million or so left, plus a club option after that. So that's the number one reason, if you want to find one, that he will be on this team. It's not official. They could trade him. They could do whatever. But until they do that, I have to assume, and I think you have to assume as well, that he's on the team. We'll stop there. Do you have anything else to add? I mean, we talked about him so many times. I'm not even going to, I have nothing else to add about this, but I don't want him to play. He's on the team. I expect him to play if he's on the team.
So just for our listeners, I just wanted to be abundantly clear. There's what I think should happen and what I think will happen.
Yep. Same.
What I think should happen is that he should not be on the team. I think he should have gotten a longer suspension, and I think he should have missed some time, at least in 2022. I do not want him on the team. I think all of you that were tweeting about how it wasn't so bad that he was choking his wife with a hand because it also had a cell phone in it were repellent. And if I think that your opinion that choking someone with a cell phone in your hand is okay, is repellent, then you can probably infer my opinions about the person who was actually doing the choking with video that I am certain was available to Major League Baseball and that they still made this decision. It really bothers me. I would do not want him on the team. I sincerely hope the Braves trade him. However, what I think is going to happen, if I'm looking this objectively, is that he's owed too much money. There's already a concern about losing Freddie Freeman. I'm certain that there's at least a concern about that. And combine that with the money that's owed to Marcell Ozuna and the need for offensive production, I am at least going to entertain the idea that it's likely that he is a member of the 2022 roster. One of the bigger concerns beyond the human aspect is that in addition to being owed a lot of money, he hasn't played in a year, basically.
Yep.
Is coming off a pretty significant injury. I mean, we saw those fingers on that slide, and external from all of the other off the field stuff, which I am certain not only brings into question about what this clubhouse thinks of him, what kind of person he is going forward, how he'll interact with fans, but more importantly, has impacted his preparation. He's been playing in winter ball. He's played reasonably well, I think. He's hit a few home runs here and there. You'd think that a guy of his caliber who, you know, two seasons ago almost hit a triple crown in a shortened season, but was not good to start the season last year, is now on a lengthy layoff with a lot of things going on, both in terms of his physical health as well as his off-the-field issues. He's going to get booed a whole bunch when he takes the field again. Do I think he will be as bad as he was to start the 2021 season? No, I don't. I do think he's a better player than that. I think that his track record speaks to the fact that he will be a better player than that. Is he worth all the headaches that could come with it? Because this is something that doesn't get talked enough about, because it can piss me off and it can piss you off to the ends of the earth. If there are players in that clubhouse, particularly certain players in that clubhouse, that take issue with having him on that roster, if you think that doesn't matter, I mean, we try to turn like clubhouse chemistry almost into a meme at times, because, you know, like some guy makes a guy giggle, like he's just like great clubhouse guy and that matters so much. Or, you know, like just because this guy is like a steely glare and can look at a guy and they'll run a little bit faster, that he has this all this value in a clubhouse. But when you have a guy who has like domestic violence charges against him and video out there, and he was persona non grata since the day he was like, you know, all these allegations went on against him. He was not mentioned in postseason interviews. He was not featured at all in postseason celebrations, nothing. If you think that there are players in that clubhouse that are not upset about what he did, what he's accused of, and the idea of bringing him back on this roster, you are crazy. And that's the bigger issue I have, is that this could really impact the team. He might not be good. He's owed a lot of money, and he's going to be occupying in what is we think is going to be a DH spot that is going to have a lot of value offensively. Like for me, like personally, I don't want him on the team and he should be traded, but there are a lot of really good baseball reasons to do it too. Even if you're like a very forgiving sort and are willing to, you know, ignore all that stuff, right? There's baseball reasons why it may make sense to move him too. So,
yeah,
I don't think he's as bad as he was to start the season in terms of like how he'll play and all that stuff. But there's some real concerns I have, and they have to do with his play on the field as well as kind of what he could impact with the team.
Sure, and yeah, all that is fair, and I think that he, you know, he was very good 2 years ago. He was a good player before that. The numbers last year on the field were not very good. And I think people, not that they people have forgotten, maybe just something slipped their mind about, you know, one of the reasons the Braves didn't have to act quicker about his, you know, the allegations and also what was caught on video is that he was hurt. So he was already away from the team. If that had happened when he was actively playing, like if he had played the previous day or whatever, it would have been it was already a big bleep storm. It would have been an even bigger one if he had been playing. Because he was already hurt, and that kind of gave them some cover, and they got, you know, quote unquote lucky, if you want to put it that way, in terms of having to deal with it. But
some other players in some bigger markets having their own problems certainly helped his cause a little bit too.
So all that said, like, he hasn't played since May 25th. It's a long time. He had a 73 WRC plus last year and slugged under 400. So like what you said, like, there's no reason to think he's bad at baseball. Like, he may be. It's not impossible that he's just done. But, you know, 2 years ago he was obscenely good. His baseline for his career is probably more realistic, and that's a 115 WRC plus and a slugging in the mid 400s. That's a pretty good, valuable DH in particular. But if you have to play him in the outfield, you know, he's probably at least a solid starting level corner outfielder. If he's a good hitter and a bad fielder, that's kind of what you would expect in left field for what it is. So, you know, we like the contract, all that stuff. If you remove but if you took away all of the off-field stuff, you know, you probably feel fine about him filling a roster spot for what he's making. It's not like a great contract, nor is it a terrible one. It's just the fact that you have to deal with everything else. And we both don't want him to be on the team, but the money is going to maybe drive the factors on this. And we'll see. It still wouldn't surprise me if they traded him. I just don't think, I mean, think about it this way. If you're another team, do you want to trade Marcel Ozuna right now? The answer is probably no.
Unless you're one of the, maybe the Mets. Who seem to?
I'm sure there are teams that are probably more willing to take the PR hit than others. But
they had no problems bringing back Jose Reyes.
I'm just saying, like, if you combine the contract, it's not like it's a huge bargain. I mean, at minimum, he's appropriately paid, I would say. And then you factor in age. You factor in he wasn't great last year. He's a limited defender. And then, of course, the big domino of the PR hit that you're going to take if you trade for him. It's not as if Anthopoulos, if he's not empowered to cut him, which I don't think he is, or he would have already done it, by the way, I don't think that ownership / McGurk, whoever you want to say it is going to let Anthopoulos just cut him and pay him. So if you take that off the table as an option, because it would have, again, I think it would have already happened if it was the case, you probably can't trade him without paying a ton of his salary and getting nothing back. And that's okay. I'd rather them do that personally. But I don't know, just before, I think there's a lot of like, just trade him as a sentiment out there. And I totally get it. I don't think that's a super easy thing to do, is all I'll say.
Yeah, that people think that they can trade him and get something valuable back. And that's
probably that's not happening. I'll say this right now. They're not going to be able to trade him for any kind of value. I will be stunned if that happened. If they trade him, it's them paying probably half a salary and taking a PR hit anyway. And just hoping to get him off the roster. I would guess. I mean, bring this back, Eric. Remind me if later on they're able to trade him for a package that is a good baseball return, I will eat crow on that. But I would be floored if that happened.
So are you gonna actually eat crow, or are we like really putting real terms on this?
We'll do something stupid. But there's not. I mean, you know this. There's no chance they're doing it. There's no way they're getting an actual baseball return for him. They're not.
No, I'm just sorry. I'm just looking at the timestamp on this episode. Okay. Yeah. Just
make sure. Mark it down. It's fine.
We're good.
At any rate, let's move on. I don't want to talk about him anymore, but let's just say this. If he's on the team, he's going to play. Do you agree on that?
I do agree on that. And he will be the DH.
Yeah. If the DH exists, it makes your life a little bit easier because that's obviously what he should be doing from a baseball standpoint. If it doesn't exist, I still think he's going to be your starting left fielder just because of the money he's owed. And presumably now,
seems likely, yeah,
we're not going to assume because baseball is so screwed up. And if we talked about before with Rob Manfred, I am going to hope that the Braves and every other team know if they have a DH or not as they go to the roster. It's not a given. But I would hope for the sake of Anthopoulos that he's at least aware of the rules before free agency opens again. We'll see. All right. So get that out of the way. The other guy on the roster right now that we know is a major league level hitter is Adam Duvall. Adam Duvall yes. has been tendered. He's not gotten his finalized salary through arbitration yet, but it's going to be like $9-10 million, something like that for one season. He's 33 years old now, so he's not a spring chicken, but he's been an above average hitter in five of the last seven seasons. He has a career slugging of 473. He's obviously a hot and cold guy. And that's, we've kind of always ridden for Adam Duvall as a underrated player. I still believe that he's a pretty good defender. He can play some center field as he was last year at times. He's a very valuable rotational piece, but Adam Duvall is not a star. He's not someone that the Braves have even loved to get, just give every single day at bats to. And at the moment, if you factor in Ozuna, he's your third best outfielder. And that includes Ronald Acuna, who again might miss part of the season. If you there's a scenario opening day where he's your best outfielder on the roster right now, because Acuna won't be playing probably, and then Ozuna might be traded. So that's where we are.
if they don't make any signings, yeah, you're right.
Which they will. I mean, obviously they're not going to do nothing else, but Adam Duvall is like pretty clearly, as far as April is concerned, he is your safety net guy you can trust on the team right now.
Oof.
Right for April. I mean, am I wrong?
No, you're not. You're not wrong. It's more saying it out loud makes me die inside a little bit. But yeah, okay, I'm with you. Yep.
And he, I mean, okay, the way that I would describe Adam Duvall is that if Adam Duvall is your third outfielder, you're fine. If he's your fourth outfielder, you're overjoyed. That's what I would say about Adam Duvall.
If he's your top outfielder,
correct. And that's what I mean. The Marlins. Adam Duvall is a good player. We have been very pro Adam Duvall. Especially when he was getting lambasted early in his tenure after the first trade. I lost my mind when they didn't tender him last year. I thought that was a terrible decision. We proved to be right on that. But Adam Duvall is not someone who you want to, you know, fully rely on as like a top five, six guy in your lineup every single day if you can help it. So, you know, he's a good player. I think that if I had to bet right now, if he starts opening day, I would say yes. Just because of the factors in play. Like you factor in Ronnie, you factor in the fact that he can play center field in a pinch. I think he projects to be a starting outfielder on opening day, if I had to guess. That's not a guarantee, but if he's healthy, it's more likely than not that he's starting.
Yeah, I mean, if we assume a world where we kind of think the signings and the situation with Ozuna goes the way we think it's going to go, like it's pretty clear that Duvall will at least be playing starting on opening day.
Yep.
You know, whether it's in right or left or even in center. I will say that while he certainly has made starts in center field, color me unconvinced that he should be playing that position based on some of the reads that he was.
Eric, he played center field in the playoffs. That happened.
Yeah, I know he did. That was primarily because if you're playing Eddie Rosario or Jorge Soler in center field in the World Series, you are committing actual malpractice. But yeah, and you know, when some of the reads that Adam Duvall was taking on some of those fly balls, he didn't look a whole lot better at times. But I do think he's like a good corner outfielder defender.
Yep.
You know, those 3 weeks of the season, you know, they're usually scattered around, but those 3 weeks where he is turns into Babe Ruth, you can't get him out and he's hitting the ball 500 feet. Love to see it. You know, those are really, really fun. He's certainly a streaky guy. And when he's bad, he's quite bad and he'll strike out a whole bunch and be upsetting. But overall, like, this is a guy that's going to be on the team. He's already been tendered a contract. They got it right this time. They're going to pay a little bit more this time as opposed to what they were going to have to pay for him for last year if they just tendered him a contract. You know, there's a lot of, you know, speculation just, you know, like how hamstrung the Braves were financially going into the season and all that stuff. So I imagine that coming off a World Series run that, you know, we might not see as much of that. Everyone has a right to be pretty pissed off if that happens. But you know, he'll be a solid piece. And if your outfield going into, you know, opening day is something like Adam Duvall, Christian Pache in center, and then maybe signing one of the other guys that, you know, from the playoff run, whether that's Rosario or Soler or whoever, I have feelings about who that should be or who it would be for me. But if you're doing that on opening day, you're not particularly upset, especially if you sign back Freddie and you're infield as good as you think it's going to be. So, you know, Duvall is not going to be the guy that's going to make your lineup bad, if that makes any sense. He'll be fine. Sometimes he'll be awesome.
Yeah, like I said before, you know, Adam Duvall is a guy you have to take the holistic approach on. You cannot judge him on 2 week samples, pro or con. Like, he's a guy that you have to just play. And you know, if you want to sit against a righty every once in a while, I totally get that. But I think he, you know, is a safe bet to be a league average or better hitter. He's a league average or better defender, and that's usually a good combination to be pretty good. And that's what Amduval is. So,
yep. Defensively, he can even be better than that. So,
I think he's pretty darn good in the corner. Honestly, I really do.
Yeah, like he's, when he has those 0-for-16 stretches with 11 strikeouts, he'll at least be catching the balls that he's supposed to be catching in the corner. So,
yeah, I don't think he is like Jason Hayward in the corner outfield spot, but he's a good defender, I think, in the corner. And in center, I agree with you, it's more of an emergency situation, but he can do that, and there's some value in that. Okay, so after those three, there is a bit of a drop in terms of certainty, maybe not in terms of talent, but in terms of like projection. We'll start with the very boring guy in terms of on the field, and that's Guillermo Heredia, who's on the team for $1 million.
Boring.
On the field. That's why I said on the field.
Okay, on the field, I agree with that.
There's a reason why I said on the field. That was the only reason why I said that, because he's not boring off the field. He's very funny, and the clubhouse presence is well documented, but he is for $1 million back as a fifth outfielder type, and the way that I wrote it down was with vibes, because he's got great vibes. He's not a very good hitter. He's a decent defender and can play some center field. He has been above replacement level in terms of like war for the last several seasons, but not by much. He's a bench guy. It's what he is. The vibes are there, and I like the contract. It's $1 million. That's what you should be paying for that kind of guy, but you don't want to have to start him very much, is all I'll say.
Yeah, I mean, if he's the guy that spells your top three guys every once in a while, that's completely fine. He certainly won't kill you defensively. Can play all three positions out there. Provide some energy. I don't even think like when they were having to play him a lot last year, like it was clear like he either had to go on the IL or he had to take some time off because he was fatigued. Like he actually can't play a lot, if that makes any sense. He plays better when he's, you know, not playing a whole ton. So, you know, for $1 million, you get a guy who really helps out your clubhouse. You, as a defensive replacement, perfectly reasonable. That doesn't matter as much anymore. It's worth noting because you're not switching in for pitchers. You know, well, I say that we are crossing our fingers and toes that this is the case.
It's
those kinds of, so your bench isn't as big of a deal, but having a guy like Heredia, if you're needing, especially if you're thinking about bringing back a guy like Jorge Soler, for example, you may still want to do defensive replacements in that particular scenario. And in which case, having a guy like Heredia, who is a good defender, he's not all world, but he's good. And you having that kind of guy on your bench is perfectly reasonable. So no thoughts there beyond the, if he's playing a lot, that means the Braves are probably in trouble, which is exactly what happened last year.
Yeah. There were some outfield deployments in the middle of last season that were dire.
Abraham Almonte.
Yeah. And but Heredia was fine. And again, he's the fifth outfielder on the team, you would hope. And you have to have a guy like that. And you know, having a guy like that, that also gives you clubhouse vibes and keeps it light and can play defense is a pretty strong combination. So we'll leave it there, but he is at least around. And then we get into a segment that you're going to carry a little bit. And that is the young guys who are on the team, at least around the team, they're in the organization and talented high upside guys, but are varying levels of uncertain. And they are in no order, Christian Pache, Drew Waters, and even Michael Harris, we're getting questions about. I'm going to save those for the end because he's obviously the furthest away. But Pache, you know, still an elite defender at a premium position in center field. He's 23 years old, but I would say he's been genuinely horrible at the plate in limited time in the majors. His WRC plus in the major leagues is -6. It's a small sample size. That's the thing you could say
that's not very good.
It's not good. And even at AAA, and this is something that you will definitely have to tell me more about than I would be able to know. But even at AAA last season, his numbers were pedestrian. They're not terrible. But he had an OPS in like the mid-700s, a AAA, which is not going to blow you away for a top-end prospect. He was better in AA before that. But, you know, the bat is a genuine question mark. And then you get into Waters, who has not even debuted yet. Obviously, Pache's been up before. Waters, I'll let you clear out for you to give an overall scouting report. He was pretty bad in AAA last year, too. His numbers are not very good in like a pretty big sample size in AAA. He was better in AA, but he had a 710 OPS in AAA last season. So those two guys will group together. Eric, tell me more about what you think about these guys, their potential to contribute this season. Pache haven't been up and been closer, but Waters is, they're basically the same age. So people always ask us about them. So it's time to talk about them.
So I'm going to talk about the most likely to be on the roster on opening day down to the least likely. Pache is the most likely to guy, and it's for a number of reasons. One, he's already on the 40-man roster. That gets through one very big hurdle in terms of service time, et cetera, et cetera. Two, yes, those 72 plate appearances in the major leagues have not been good. It's worth mentioning he was a part of the playoff run in 2020. He was better in that. He was better during that playoff run when he was actually playing. He had some key hits. He actually produced a bit at the plate, was drawing some walks, and considering the fact that he hadn't played at all on the major league level, I mean, at least appreciably before that, that was nice to see. In terms of what he did at AAA, you know, after he was, you know, obviously not good at the plate in the major leagues, then goes and then gets hurt. And then immediately after that, he wasn't particularly great at the plate in Gwinnett. I will say that like the last couple months of the season down in AAA were significantly better for him in terms of just like consistently driving balls rather than either like trying to hack the ball out of the ballpark or, you know, then all of a sudden turning into kind of a slap hitter. You know, it just never felt like he had a consistent approach at the plate. It felt like his timing was way off. He was more on time later on in the season. It seemed like he had figured some things out. So overall, I think in terms of proximity and kind of the progress that he made, I feel decent about Pache certainly being better than what he was in those 72 plate appearances. I mean, again, you know, a WRC plus of -6 is pretty bad. So I'm not going to like discount that, but I do think he'll be better than that. And he's still an amazing defender out there. Of the options that they would have, you know, especially to play center field, Pache would be my guy. Waters is an interesting case because, one, he was dealing with an injury, or especially early on in the season last year. It was an oblique, I think. And there was also a situation where he has always had approach issues at the plate, and it felt like the adjustments that he was making at the plate this year made that problem worse because it felt like he was guessing the pitches correctly, but the decision-making wasn't good. Like, it felt like the pitches that he thought he could do damage on and was guessing were not pitches that he should be swinging at. Like, that's a slider. I know it's a slider. I can hit that slider. That third part was the problem because he couldn't hit it. It was diving out of the zone or diving at his back foot or, you know, then all of a sudden he'd get in pitcher's counts. And it felt like the decision-making wasn't there and he wasn't understanding what pitches he needed to try to turn on and other ones either he needed to try to lay off of or at least foul off or whatever. Like just the approach to what to do, even if he has the information as to what pitch he has, was not lining up with the decisions that were being made as to what to do with them. Michael Harris, but I will say though, in Drew Waters' defense here, one, he's a very, very talented guy and that if he can get his hit tool figured out at all, he has been drawing more walks. You know, has been seeing more deep counts. And in terms of raw tools, he's right up there with Pache. He's a strong arm. He's a guy that can play center, does have power, even though it didn't show much in AAA. I will say that AAA was a bit weird last year for a number of players across the league. So I'm not going to necessarily pick on Pache and Waters. And more importantly, he was added to the 40-man roster because to protect him from the Rule 5 draft. So that's one hurdle to him being on the Major League roster that has currently been overcome by him. I think he'll have to hit a good bit at AAA for that to happen, but he's a talented enough guy where that wouldn't shock me. The one that would shock me is Michael Harris. One, he's only 20 years old. He's only 20 years old right now.
Even I know this one, Eric. Even I have an opinion on that. I have no opinions on minor league guys generally, but we got multiple questions. I know you saw probably the same ones about this. The reason why we were talking about this is because people were actually asking us if he is an option. And you know, he's really good, but he's not quite there. I don't think
he's very, very good. He has a lot of raw power. We haven't seen that as much in games. I really like the play discipline in a lot of ways. There are still some things about off-speed pitches on the outside part of the plate that sometimes he gets got. And that's just something that he needs to work on. You can keep in mind, his first full season ball was last year. And he's already, if he's not the top prospect in the Braves farm system, he's in the top three. And if anyone has him outside of that, I have questions. So I'll just say that he is very, very good. I would not be shocked if he has a bit of a breakout season next year. But I still think that the most likely thing that happens is that he'll start the season at AA. He'll probably play well there. He might hit his way to AAA. Unless he's absolutely knocking the brains out of the ball and the Braves have a need in their outfield, the likelihood is that when he debuts, it'll be 2023. And by the way, that is not bad. Debuting as a 22-year-old, I know we're a little bit spoiled because of Ronnie, but that is still very quick, especially for a guy who wasn't a full-time position player in high school. To do what he does and with his skill set is pretty special. And the guy works crazy hard. He's a lot of fun. He can play all three outfield positions. Love the hit tool. Love the raw power. I wish, hope it shows up more out in games. Just needs to work on a few things here and there, but he could be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously have not seen him nearly as much as you have, but all indications are very positive. It's just worth noting that, like, I think you mentioned it in there, like, you can't compare anybody to Ronald Acuna, so, like, you cannot assume he's going to be a star at 21, 22 in the major leagues. It's just not what's going to happen, probably. It's possible, I guess, but...
That'd be great.
It'd be cool, no question, but, yeah. I mean, he's not played above, what, high A right now? Is the
first he's gotten? He played a full season of high A.
Yeah, so generally guys, not impossible, generally guys do not go from high A to the majors within a year. That doesn't always...
Ronnie got really close.
Ronnie got very close, and didn't Andrew Jones do that? I think he did at one point, but he was...
I'm pretty sure he just got called straight up in double A.
That was a long time ago, but regardless, I don't think that's going to happen.
Alex Wood as well.
Alex Wood, though, wasn't he a college pitcher? Like, isn't that it's a little different, isn't it? Wasn't Joey Devine like basically almost straight from college?
We don't talk about those.
Okay. So all that said, I mean, the real thing is, like, what else they do, which we'll get into in a second. I'm trying to figure out what the likelihood is that Pache opens in the majors, and I don't really know the answer because it's really entirely predicated on what else they do. I'm a fan generally of giving guys that are young and talented rope. And I don't think it would be fair to just bring Pache up and like play him like sometimes. I want to see him play, but you know, the shine's off to some extent with a bat. It's just what it is. But I don't know. It really will depend on what else there is. And we'll get into that now. But I mean, is there a scenario in your mind at which Waters is on the team in April?
The scenarios that exist are not good.
Okay, that's why. I'm saying as a plan.
No, I don't see that happening.
I agree.
Again, unless like Ozuna is no longer on the team and or hurt, and Adam Duvall is hurt. Yeah,
I'm saying no. Like beyond Ronnie, no other major injuries. There's not a path for Waters to be on the roster.
Pache was better at AAA. He's been he has more upside.
He's also safer defender because the defense. It's like
Pache does not have to hit to have some semblance of value on the baseball field.
You can at least theoretically, I'm not saying this is a great idea, but you can at least theoretically defend a world in which with the DH in particular, you just start Pache in center and bat him ninth and live with it. That's not the worst thing in the world. You can do that. There's some value in that. And so we'll come back to this later on, but I wouldn't waste talk about those guys because those are all the internal options. So basically overall right now, the situation with the Braves outfield is that they have one superstar who is not going to be ready probably early on in the season. Then they have two guys who I would describe as, you know, opening day level starters on a baseball team. And that's Ozuna, of course, not great in terms of fun, but he is a star level player. And then Duvall. And then you have a bench-only guy in Heredia. And then you have prospects, all of which are uncertain. But two of the three that we talked about are not even close to at least they have not been in the majors just yet. Pache's been up and struggled. So it's obviously not an opening day ready group of players, if you can help it, for a contending team. They want to have more than this, and I think they're going to almost certainly do something else. My operating assumption, and I wonder if you agree with this, Eric, is that they are going to acquire at least one starting caliber outfielder and maybe two more. I don't know if it's going to be signings or trades, but it will floor me if they don't at least acquire one more guy that they can reasonably start on opening day. Agree or disagree?
I agree wholeheartedly. I think they're going to acquire at least one more, possibly two. I have thoughts on how two should work if I was making the decisions, but at least one.
Yeah, and I also think that if it's we'll keep our streak alive, talk about Freddie Freeman briefly. There's also a if Freddie's on the team versus Freddie's not on the team scenario.
Because then all of a sudden how much money you have is a little bit
correct. Different. It's a lot different if you don't have a $30 million first baseman. But we'll save that for later. The three incumbent guys are, of course, Rosario, Soler, and Jock Peterson. They're all free agents. They're all still free agents. We talked about those guys a lot, so I don't really have much to add other than just to say that it's a little bit tougher to sign Jorge Soler to a deal that he would accept while also having Ozuna on the team, because they are very similar in terms of strengths and weaknesses. That'd be my only point. I think Soler is a guy you would rather DH than not. And if you have Ozuna on the team, that's the same problem you're having.
I'll actually go one step further and ask you this. If, let's say that they figure out the CBA, you know, and that there's the period of you can make transactions again. Do you think if the Braves were to sign Jorge Soler, like that's their first move, what's the odds that Marcell Ozuna's on the team?
Well, I'm going to answer your question with a question, but I'll also answer it. My immediate response would be to ask you, is there any scenario they're going to do that and not have a plan for Ozuna already?
That's kind of what I'm getting at. Well, I think that
they could.
I don't think it'd be a good idea.
No, me either. Just because like, if you're spending, again, I'm assuming Soler is going to cost some money, like some real money, nothing crazy.
He's coming off a World Series MVP.
He has
a 48 home run season. Someone's going to pay him, give him like a 2 or 3 year deal, right?
Sure. I'll say this. If you have a DH and you know it, if they know the DH is in place, you can get away with it. You can get away with it. Now, I still don't think it's the greatest idea, but if you know you have the DH, you can do it.
What do you think the likelihood is that Ozuna is on the team in that scenario?
It goes down. I mean, I think it has to, just because of the common sense of it all. The DH factor is huge. If you don't have a DH, I think there's a 0% chance that they have Soler and Ozuna both on the team. Because do that?
What I think is the most likely scenario is that the only way that the Braves bring back Jorge Soler is if the DH is in existence.
Well, it should. Right? I mean, that's...
Yeah. And
now, one quick counter to that. I do think that you could construct a scenario where Ozuna is not on the team and you have Soler with no DH. That I can see.
I could see it happening. I think it's more likely that they would put Rosario in that spot than Soler.
Well, I mean, it might not be up to them. That's the thing. I mean, obviously, it's not one-sided.
That is the problem, right?
It's all about the market, really, at the end of the day. That's why there's so much uncertainty with this conversation, because number one, we're in the dark ages in terms of what's going on in the market. But, you know, there's always, it's not a yes or no with the Braves. Like, they have to beat other offers and entice these guys to come back. And I mean, yes, they won the World Series with these guys, but they're not like wedded to the city of Atlanta where they're going to take like these huge hometown discounts either. Like, it is what it is. But...
No, it's completely fine. I will say that the least likely guy to come back, I think, is Jock Peterson.
I agree. I think it's the same thing after the season. And it's a fit thing. It's a performance thing. Like, he was the worst of the three as well.
We'll never forget Jocktober. It's fine.
Now, the one counterpoint to that, and number one, I agree with you, is that perhaps there's a scenario where his market dries up and the other two guys get overpaid, get like real big contracts that are like, you know, people buying high on them, and maybe Jock doesn't have that happen and the Braves get a better discount on him. That is conceivable to me. But I'd be surprised if they pay Jock like market value.
I would be kind of surprised if there was a bidding war for Rosario and or Soler, because they weren't a part of that group of players where the bidding wars were happening, if that makes any sense, right? Like, that batch of players before the cutoff, before the CBA expire, if they were going to kind of get overpaid, I kind of feel like that would have happened already.
I tend to agree, sense? But also there's going to be a free-for-all. I mean, because of the way this is constructed, there might be a 10-day, two-week complete free-for-all, and that can screw some stuff in the market too. So we'll save that for when it happens, but there's just so much uncertainty.
Pretty excited.
I think that all three guys could return. They won't all three together return, I should say. I think at least the door would be open to any of the three coming back. I think that it's hard to say who. It's hard to say what they'll make. And the Soler thing with Ozuna is a factor. And it's worth noting that none of those three guys are very good defensively. you know, Rosario made a great play in on defense in the World Series.
Well, he made a play look a lot better.
I understand. We talked about this too, but I don't think any of them are like completely untenable defensively. Even Soler is like, he's not as bad as Ozuna. For instance,
he's just not gonna make great plays.
He's not very good. But if he's your worst defender, he's in left field. It's not the end of the world. It's not a big deal. He's better than Ozuna defensively, I think, at this stage, given Ozuna's arm falling off, basically.
I think it's fair for me to guess that if Freddie Freeman resigns, then at least one of those guys is coming back. I would hope so.
I mean, because here's the thing.
But if he's not, then yeah. I don't think any of them are. I think that they have to go find a bat.
Well, they have to go. Yeah, they have to go through a whole plan about what they're going to do if Freddie leaves, which is something we've been talking about for a while. We'll come back to if we need to. We should always mention the other options that are not signed as outfielders. There are a couple of big name high price guys that are probably only going to be options if Freddie leaves, and that's Chris Bryant and Nick Castellanos. Those guys are going to get so much money that I don't see the Braves doing that without Freddie leaving, but you know, I happily be wrong. I would love for them to sign Chris Bryant to a huge contract. That'd be fun with Freddie. But it's not likely to me, I don't think.
I'm going to call that unlikely, yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, there's a tier of like Kyle Schwarber, who's probably a better as a DH, but a guy who can play corner outfield and is a left-handed bat. You have Suzuki is available, who's going to be posted. Michael Conforto, Tommy Pham. Of the veteran options, like an Andrew McCutchen, he's pretty old, but was pretty good last season. Corner outfield guy. So notably, none of those guys are center fielders. So,
I mean, you could put Conforto out there in center.
You can play him there, but like that's kind of like playing Adam Duvall there. Like you can do it.
And more importantly, Conforto is going to get enough money. Where are you really wanting? Is that what you're? I mean, I don't know. I'm not the biggest Michael Conforto fan.
I looked at all of the lists that I could come up with, and those I just named all of the guys who I would describe as guys who you could just say this is a starter for you. Like there are some other guys who are like platoon pieces or fourth outfielder types, but the list of free agents that are actually starting caliber. And again, you have to also add in Rosario and Soler, at least if not all three of those guys in this list, but there's only seven or eight guys available that are not signed that are free agents that I think are like definite starters. So,
and there's even a couple guys like McCutchen, for example, you really have to kind of like, you're looking at where he is now.
He's old.
And see how much he's like, you have to think that, like, you have to be kind of thinking a little bit of time travel, right? Like, it's not the same guy.
Well, he's 35, and like, yeah, you can't treat him as like the guy he was in Pittsburgh. I think he's still a starter. Like, he had about an 800 OPS last season, but
better than you'd think he was. Yeah,
yeah, he was pretty good, but it wasn't like he was great, and you can't expect him to play a full season and all that stuff too. So, all that I did that exercise partly to just look at it. Like, look, we know the Braves have to do something else. And there are not that many guys. So like trades are even harder to predict, but you know, I think it's almost as likely that they have to trade for somebody than they actually sign someone. So.
Yep. Pretty excited to hear all these Mitch Haniger trade proposals again. Those were real fun the first time around.
It never ends. And as we've said a number of times, what is the biggest trade Anthopoulos has ever made in terms of prospect capital? At this point,
Eric? Joey Wentz going to the Detroit Tigers for one Green.
That was the highest guy on your list that's been traded?
He was number 11 or 12. That's the highest.
Yeah. So in the Anthopoulos era, at least according to the best prospect list, which is TC's prospect list, the Braves have never
Segue. I love
they have it. They've never traded a top 10 prospect on the list for any deal, even this year. And this is not a criticism of Anthopoulos. Obviously, it was a home run grand slam deadline in which they turned a lot of flotsam into a completely revamped outfield. But they have never done anything approaching an all-in trade. They just don't do that.
The World Series MVP was acquired at the trade deadline for a reliever that was in high A.
And there you go. So, yeah, we know the outfield's going to have to get better, I guess, in conclusion. They have some guys who are a part of the core in the outfield. The Ozuna thing will get resolved, whether he's in or out. We'll find that out at some point. Acuna hopefully be back as soon as he safely can be. And then they have work to do. That's the synopsis of the outfield. Before we get out of here, Eric, I think it's at least a little birdie told me that it's about to be prospect list time. Can you confirm this? Are we about to roll something out that's going to break people's brains?
I can confirm that it will not be coming out this week. It'll be coming out next week. But Gaurav, Garrett, Matt, Wayne and myself have compiled our preseason top 30 prospect list in addition to the honorable mentions. That list has already been compiled. I'm just having to finish up polishing up the articles, adding some write-ups in there, and, you know, intros and all that stuff. So it has been run. We have done all the voting. It is certainly very interesting. We continue to be gathering more and more information. And I imagine that as we get this list turned out, as soon as we turn it out, we're probably going to start changing our minds and wanting to move guys up and down just because that's just the way we are about these things. But yep. So not this coming week, but the week of the 16th of January, we will start rolling out our preseason top 30 prospect lists. Also, and that'll be over on talkingchop.com. There will be a Road to Atlanta podcast after that list is rolled out, where we talk about what we thought about the list overall, kind of our thoughts on the guys who have gone up and down. In addition to kind of, you know, a little bit of kind of some review type information, where that was a lot of in our, like, our review series of minor league guys. We're also having two different series coming out. Well, I say series, they're gonna be kind of more just kind of feature type things that we're gonna be doing over on the site. One, we're gonna be talking about the guys who are currently on the Hall of Fame ballot that used to play for the Braves, or at least that are eligible. And then we also are going to be talking about some potential free agent targets of the guys who are left on the free agent markets, guys who exist that may be of note. And we talk about why or why not they could be fits for the Braves and why. And that's going to be rolling out over the next month or so, kind of filling in the gaps while we're waiting for the league and the Players Association to get their acts together. So make sure you're keeping an eye on the site, particularly next week, because that's when the prospect list is rolling out. But also for the kind of those additional kind of little bundles of information for you guys as we kind of start rolling into the season.
Yeah, it's obviously a must read each and every time that you guys do a list. Also a must listen when you talk about it at Road to Atlanta on the same podcast feed. So if you subscribe to the show, you get this podcast, which again has 330 plus episodes, largely with myself, Eric, and or Scott. You also get Road to Atlanta, which is the minor league focused podcast, which is awesome. And then Daily Hammer with Sean has been great this entire offseason so far. Sean's been cranking through an episode or two per week, and that's been keeping us afloat. So it's a great time to subscribe, even during this down period. We've had great support, so we really appreciate it. But please tell your friends, our Braves fans, and I'm sure they will like it. And also check out the site, because the written content has not stopped. Chris is cracking the whip, keeping the site going in this
He's definitely cracking the whip for sure.
It's what he does. He's great at running sites. I've worked for him two different places. That's just what happens. So yeah, thanks for listening, everybody. Eric, any final thoughts before we sign off on January 9th?
Resign Freddie Freeman.
That'd be cool. I would appreciate that. Yeah, that's it for this show. Programming note in terms of the TC podcast, we did just talk about Road to Atlanta coming in the next, you know, week and a half or so. I'm traveling next weekend, so probably not next Sunday, but every couple weeks during this down period, and then once something's happening again, we'll go back to like an every week kind of format, but we're checking in regularly, let's just say. So please subscribe. That's the best way to find the podcast, and we'll have another show in the near future, and we'll see you all next time.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.